There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I think there are some mental health challenges that you might face as a queer person that a heterosexual therapist or a cisgender therapist just might not have come across. So it's not so much like it's deliberately not being taught. I think it's so helpful and affirming to come into contact with other people who are queer and kind of seek peer support type of resources. And it's also so helpful to receive the right gender and sexuality affirming care from a therapist. So for instance, one of the video therapy courses that we have on the Calder app is Managing Gender Dysphoria. And that's developed by a trans therapist who's actually been through that and has struggled with that themselves. So that's a very kind of specific thing that people face. It's quite difficult to Google. It's quite difficult to find like trusted resources. There is stuff out there about it, but to get it straight from a trans therapist who's really been through it, I think is really valuable. So it's not so much that a heterosexual or a cisgender therapist can't speak to that at all.
Hello and welcome to This Is HCD. My name is Jerry Scullion and I'm a designer, educator and the host of This Is HCD based in the wonderful city of Dublin, Ireland. Now, our goal here is to have conversations that inspire and help move the dial forward for organisations to become more human-centred in their approach to solving complex business and societal problems. Now, for subscribers on our podcast and the newsletter, you will have read recently that we're getting closer and closer to a massive milestone on the podcast, and that is our millionth download. We're currently in around 860,000 downloads. I wanted to give a huge shout out to everyone who has messaged us recently to congratulate us. Thank you so much. One thing you can do is subscribe to the podcast by hitting that subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening to the podcast. It'll mean we can stay in touch and you can get notified when an episode drops. Now, in this episode, I caught up with Charlotte Fontaine, an absolutely incredible service designer. Okay, we speak about Calder, a service which really, honestly, has opened my eyes through my own naivety and in exposure to the needs of people within the LGBTQIA+ community. We chat about the nuances that persist for people within that community to access therapy and how Calder offers a community-led service that includes connecting people with therapists who can better relate to the needs from people within the LGBTQIA+ community. Listen, I was quite nervous speaking about this topic, and I bring this very fact up in the conversation of why I was feeling this, how I personally can continue my own learning journey to become more aware and become a much better ally to the community. Hopefully my vulnerability can help others who may feel the same and build on this and have conversations to help grow and support the community better. Now, if you like what we're doing at This Is HCD, you can really help us out by leaving a review wherever you listen to this podcast. It only takes a couple of minutes. Or if you want to go one better, you can become a patron where you can get an ad-free stream of the podcast for as little as €1.66 per month, folks. It really helps me out, it helps the podcast out, and it helps us keep the lights on. And literally all the money goes towards editing, hosting, and maintaining our website, which is a repository of human-centered design goodness with well over 250 episodes now. Let's jump straight in. Charlotte, a very warm welcome to This Is HCD. How's it going?
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, thanks for having me on the pod.
No worries, no worries. Maybe we'll start off, I usually start off with one question that most people will know, but for our listeners, maybe start off, tell them a little bit about yourself, where you're from and what you do.
My name's Charlotte, my pronouns are she and her. I'm based in East London and I'm the co-founder of Calder, the LGBTQIA plus mental wellbeing app. And when I'm not working on that, I'm also a freelance service designer.
Very cool. Okay. So the bit we connected on is Calder. You mentioned it there. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that and, you know, how you came about, you know, the actual problem that you saw firsthand and through research on this new mental, was it, did you say, I'm going to start that one again. It is a mental health app, isn't it? It's a dedicated mental health app. All right, yes. Okay. So maybe let's talk a little bit more around Calda, okay? Because it's a mental health app and we want to try and understand, you know, your experience and how this all came about. So tell me a little bit more of the background to it.
Yes. So Calda started because three of us got together, three co-founders, Daniel Botchaby, Al D, and myself. And we were doing a lot of research around LGBT mental health because we were finding that when it came to finding therapists who understood our lived experience, so for me, I've struggled with anxiety and I'm also bisexual, and I haven't found a therapist who's able to kind of speak to that. So with our friends having kind of similar experiences and knowing that kind of the process of realizing that you're queer, coming out, speaking to people, starting to like pursue those first relationships, that whole kind of process, which can, you know, take years for some people and like days for others, that process can be really stressful and really alienating. So we wanted to create something where people could actually receive gender and sexuality affirming support in a way that was like private on their phones, and actually kind of empower people that way to get the gender and sexuality affirming support that they need.
Well, why do you think there's such a gap there in being able to find therapists with this level of experience that can provide the support and service to the people who need it? What's happening there?
Yeah, our discovery research kind of uncovered maybe a sort of three blockers to getting the right LGBT friendly mental health support. One of them is the stigma that we face as a community in general, which means that we're more likely to struggle with our mental health. So people in the LGBT community are more likely than the general population to struggle with things like anxiety and depression. So one issue is just the demand is very high. And then the second is the supply is low. So being an LGBT friendly therapist is kind of like a specialism, and therefore it can be a bit more expensive and it could be harder to find a therapist. And I guess the other is in terms of here in the UK, it's difficult for the NHS to provide like minority specific mental health support. So people in any minority group are struggling with their mental health more than others because they're in a minority group and because they experience stigma and discrimination. And then it's difficult to get the right mental health support.
How big is the community in the UK at the moment? That, you know, if you want the target audience size for, or how big is the community generally that Calda is aiming for?
Yes. So the census data's just come out and I just don't have it to hand, so I can't quote it, but I think it's big. I think it's growing. I think so many more people in the younger generation are feeling more able to come out as trans or as queer or whatever than say in our parents' generation. And I think that's really liberating in some ways. And then in other ways, it can be really difficult because they're coming out in a world that's still very heteronormative. So I do think that the kind of LGBT and queer population is definitely growing.
Yeah, it's funny, like as I was saying to you before, I'm in my mid-40s and I grew up in a primarily Catholic background, Catholic household. So I'm still learning, okay, and it's taken me an awful long time to be vulnerable enough with the community to be able to say that, you know, I may put a foot wrong here and there in this conversation when I'm talking about some of this stuff, but I've got a lot of friends who identify as trans, and I'm learning all the time. Okay, so this is a topic that really interests me, okay, because there's large gaps in my background, primarily but due to my forming as a teenager, and I'm trying to understand a lot more about how we as designers in the design community can support people. Some of this stuff may come as a surprise to people that there's actually a lack of services in a Western world, imagine as well, to support people who need it. So how far back do you feel the problem goes? Does it go back to psychology in university, like an academia, in terms of how they're actually creating and training psychologists right back at that starting point? Or is the problem when people are in the workplace that they just tend to only provide support to the general population?
I think it's a mashup of things. I think there are some there are some mental health challenges that you might face as a queer person that a heterosexual therapist or a cisgender therapist just might not have come across. So it's not so much like, you know, it's deliberately not being taught. I think it's just, it's so helpful and affirming to come into contact with other people who are queer and kind of seek peer support type of resources. And it's also so helpful to receive the right gender and sexuality affirming care from a therapist. So for instance, one of the video therapy courses that we have on the Calder app is Managing Gender Dysphoria. And that's developed by a trans therapist who's actually been through that and has struggled with that themselves. So that's a very kind of specific thing that people face. It's quite difficult to Google. It's quite difficult to find like trusted resources. There is stuff out there about it, but to get it straight from a trans therapist who's really been through it, I think is really valuable. So it's not so much that a heterosexual or a cisgender therapist can't speak to that at all. It's just, I think if somebody's struggling with that, then it's easy for them to access like an affordable app on their phone and maybe have therapy as well. And maybe, you know, do other things that support their mental health, like exercise, like connecting with friends. All of these things are kind of part of, you know, part of our mental health, with therapy and things like mental health apps just being one aspect of looking after your mental health. I think, and then there's also things like internalized homophobia. So lots of people who are gay experience internalized homophobia, and that can be because they've experienced homophobia in their past, maybe at school. They've experienced homophobia with, you know, their parents or their family. And then if you then go into a therapeutic setting and you have somebody who doesn't understand homophobia or hasn't experienced homophobia or maybe even says something homophobic by accident, then that is, I guess that's not helpful in your kind of therapeutic journey. So that's why I think that something like Calder is just so helpful, because it's actually developed by therapists who understand. And then, so yeah, that's, I guess that's why it's been such a pleasure to like create it and see people using it.
Absolutely. I'm a little bit taken aback, I'll be honest, Charlotte, because, you know, I'm heterosexual. I was born a man, and there's a level of ignorance on my own part that I didn't realize just how poor the supporting services were around being able to provide this service to the LGBTQI plus community. It's I'm trying to fathom what that must be like as an individual
who's in need. I think
and
it's,
not be able to get, it's crazy.
Yeah, I think it's really up and down as well, because like I've had 6 sessions of cognitive behavioral therapy for anxiety on the NHS, and I found it massively helpful. You know, there was things about it where I felt it was in person. This is way before COVID. It had to be in person. There was lots of things that I thought we could design this service so much better. And I think as a service designer, you're constantly, every time you're interacting with services that are completely clunky and don't work, not that I want to slag off NHS, don't get me wrong. Every time you're interacting with services that don't work, you kind of have this urge to get stuck in and fix it, which is a bit exhausting, isn't it? I'm sure that you have that as well. So I think it's good and bad, because that 6 weeks of therapy that I had was genuinely life-changing, and it made me think, I wish we could provide this kind of even better. I wish we could provide this digitally. I wish we could provide this for young people who don't necessarily want to speak to a therapist, or, you know, people who are really shy, who don't want to go to a group therapy session. And then So on the flip, on one side, I think there are still, you know, brilliant mental health resources out there for whatever your sexuality or gender. There's no reason that you can't connect with those. And I think some people find things like, I don't know, Bloom or Headspace, other mental health apps, they find that they suit their needs. But I do think that there are some specific challenges that we're facing that need specific support. And then I also think there's some really idiosyncratic ways that LGBT people are failed by the health system. So an example of this is, like, if you're a woman who has sex with women, you go to the doctor about something and they ask you if you're pregnant, which they seem to do every single time that you're at the doctor. And I think lots of people have experiences where the doctor's like, well, maybe you should do a test anyway, or you're sexually active, so you could be pregnant. And obviously a woman who has sex with women isn't going to have that problem. And that is like a kind of example of like heteronormative bias just seeping into our services. And that, I think, can be exhausting for people.
It's always eye-opening. And it was only recently for me that I was having a conversation with somebody who was of an older generation in their 80s. And I couldn't believe the level of prejudice that existed in the conversation. So as I was saying before, I'm in my 40s and I'm carrying stuff like in my background, but I've absolutely no prejudice, you know, about anyone in the community here that we're talking about. But I could see how older generations, they really struggle with, you know, all of the kind of the evolution of the community and the prominence in the community. Not me, but I'm really keen to understand what this looks like for older psychologists out there at the moment, because, like, we're going to talk about Calder in a minute, but there's a lot of psychologists in the UK who might be older and harboring similar prejudices. What work can be done in that space to make the psychologists, or do you feel that that's even appropriate in terms of educating the older psychologists who may have these prejudices sitting in their background? Is that something that was tackled in the research for Calder?
I think it's hard, and I've sort of got a mixture of feelings about it. You know, we ended up as two co-founders, so myself and Daniel Botcherby, who has a background in mental health services as well. So he was the head of product for MyCognition, and he's also created a few startups. So very much his bag. And then Aldi, our other co-founder, went off to pursue their own projects. So for a long time, I guess me and Dan worked on Calder together as two human beings. And we just found that we couldn't boil the ocean, because maybe you have this urge that instead of creating an LGBT mental health app, or instead of LGBT people having to, like, you know, almost like dismantle the stigma that they faced earlier on, we should be making the world a less stigmatizing place in the first place, a less kind of heteronormative binary gender world. That would be one angle. I think my feeling there is just, it's really difficult to change people's minds. And I think here and now we're in the society that we're in, and it's not so much that that kind of burden should always fall on LGBT communities to, like, you know, to educate, but also to kind of like deal with the stigma themselves. It's just, I guess, as an organization, we just couldn't, it's almost like a completely different offering. Like Stonewall, for instance, do amazing work in terms of like advocacy and promoting LGBT rights, which I think is absolutely brilliant. And then I think there was like this gap maybe, which is a bunch of people want gender and sexuality affirming services. And like, how do we fulfill that gap with the intention of, you know, doing one thing well? That's what we were trying to do with Calder. I also think that there's something about Calder which is joyful, which is like, being queer is amazing. You know, having realizations about your gender can be really stressful, but it can also be hugely liberating and hugely positive. Same with your sexuality. So really the intention is that somebody connects with Calder, finds, you know, a community, finds the right video therapy courses for them, gets mm-hmm. the right kind of, we have these little queer affirmations also in the app, which are like super joyful and positive. Hopefully they kind of connect with all of that stuff, and then they're able to, you know, move forward and not constantly feel like things like internalized homophobia or internalized biphobia just stay with them forever, you know?
It sounds like it's, for one, I can hear that the fact that you really enjoyed creating the service, because I know you're a service designer. But one of the things that I can imagine was really important was building trust and building safety into the service itself. Is that a fair assumption, or am I?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I guess we do this a few ways. One of the things is working with brilliant therapists who okay. are BACP registered and who have a lot of experience, and creating content that's trauma informed. So because it's a video therapy course, you can pause it when it's too activating in a way that you can't really do with like one-on-one therapy.
Yep.
So you can always kind of come back to it as you're delving deeper into those topics and you're thinking, actually, this is quite stressful because yeah. this is new to me. So that's one thing. And then another thing is we have like a code of conduct. So the Calder app is like daily sort of quick things that you can do. So daily affirmations, daily meditation, daily gratitude journal, which are kind of proven to be really effective in mental health in general. And then there's these video therapy courses, which is like things like exploring your sexuality, exploring your gender, and then kind of we've got plenty of video courses on separate different topics, and then there's some mindfulness sessions. That's the kind of app. And then we also deliver mindfulness sessions. So with the mindfulness sessions, we have this really clear code of conduct. So the mindfulness coach comes in and they explain the code of conduct to everybody every time. And I think that promotes a sense of safety, but also a sense of like rhythm. So you sort of come to the sessions and you know you're going to be safe because you know that it's going to be similar each time. So yeah, I think things like having just the kind of stuff that you have in any mental health service, which is like code of conduct, incident reports if anything does come up, and then we have like an urgent support button and plenty of signposting in case people are seeking more like emergency type services like Shout or the Samaritans.
Okay, so how do you find therapists that kind of fit with the objectives of Calder? Because presumably I know there's some people on the team that are qualified therapists, but how do you screen for this? Like, do you have any advice for maybe psychologists that are listening and they might want to get involved, but they might feel like they're not able to present themselves because they might be hetero or otherwise? What advice do you give them?
So the way we find therapists is we just reach out to them cold. We find them online and read a bit about them. And then reach out to them cold. And generally, some of the courses we developed, we sort of spoke to a therapist and were like, okay, what kind of topics do you like writing about? The other thing that's tricky with finding therapists is like you can be a really brilliant therapist in a group setting or one-on-one, but you might not be that comfortable with doing things like content creation, which is what's needed for the app. So we're generally looking for LGBT therapists who have lived experience of the content that they're writing about and are comfortable with doing things like writing, really. So yeah, but I mean, we've been really lucky. We just found absolutely amazing therapists, like Dora Devasi is one of our therapists, and they wrote some of our gender courses, and they were just absolutely brilliant.
So how does it work then? You know, how do one, people find it, and how do they hire a therapist? Can you give us an overview of how people engage with the service, and do you have any sort of results in being able to see how it's growing, or what can people do to get involved as well? Like, you know, I've got so many questions about this that I'm really curious.
It's great.
But how do people find it, and how do they get involved?
So if people are looking for LGBT mental health support, you can just type CALDA into your Google Play Store or your iOS store, download it, create an account, and then it's all content on the app. So we wanted to create something that was super affordable, especially for people who might be younger when they're just starting to think about their gender and their sexuality. Yeah. So you can download it right away from the app, from the app stores, and then pay a subscription. There's also a free trial, and there's also some things that you can do on the app for free if you just want to engage with those things. So we didn't focus on kind of one-on-one therapy, because you can find LGBT therapists on platforms like Pink Therapy, which is a great platform. Okay. It's just if you're still questioning, you might not even realize that that's what you need. So with CALDA, we make TikTok videos and Instagram ads and things like that. We've also done some partnerships with influencers and a partnership with Sweatcoin, the walking app. So people can find it that way. And then, especially if you're on TikTok, like TikTok might kind of send you CALDA's direction, and then you can download it and have a proper look.
Are you able to talk about the price and what the subscription looks like?
Yes. So for $29.99 for a year, you get access to everything CALDA, basically all of the video therapy courses. And for free, you get access to the daily activities.
So what are those daily activities? You mentioned there mindfulness.
Yes. Meditation. So I guess I'm particularly excited about the queer affirmations, because if you think about the sort of world around you, there are a lot of like heteronormative affirmations. So for instance, like TV shows with heterosexual characters, and kind of the way that people talk about relationships is often with the assumption that there's like a man and a woman. The idea with queer affirmations is just things like you are valid and you are seen, and no matter what your gender or your sexuality is, you're loved. These sort of affirmations, you underestimate how much you kind of need to hear these type of things each day, and how affirmations can kind of support your mental health, because they're about refocusing on the good and refocusing on the positive. So we have those in the app. And then we have the gratitude journal, which is the same kind of pedagogy. Just as humans, we're wired to focus on the negative in life, because we're looking out for danger all the time. Whereas if you take stock of what you're grateful for in your life or in yourself, or things that have happened today, as small as a good cup of tea, that's what the gratitude journal is for. And then the meditation is like, you know, you can just click on it, use it anytime, quick meditation. And there's some longer meditations in there, but the quick meditation is quite nice to do each day.
And what about peer-to-peer support? Is that something that you explored? I know, remember back to a research project that I did, connecting within the community is something that's quite powerful. Is there something that you've explored about bringing the community, the localized community together?
Yeah, so in terms of peer support, we started with a big Facebook group, and that was our way of testing CALDA, this hypothesis that people wanted LGBT mental health support. We started in a Facebook group to kind of sort of test that assumption. And we found it was quite buzzing when it was on Facebook, because people are already on Facebook. And then when we brought that community aspect over to the app, it just wasn't as buzzing, I think, because it's not in people's habit to like log on and keep chatting in a sort of forum way. And there are also places like Reddit and places like that where people can do like forum type community support. So then we really broke it apart, and we were like, well, what is peer support? What is community support? It's not just a forum, right? You can access peer support in so many different ways. So another thing we tried was these mindfulness sessions, and that's a good way of people coming together, especially. You don't have to come to the mindfulness sessions because you feel isolated. But if you do feel isolated and you also don't necessarily want to talk to somebody in your life about your gender straight up, that can be a really positive space. I think the thing that's nice about the mindfulness sessions is like you have an invitation to say your pronouns up front. And then if next session you actually think, do you know what? I'm still experimenting with my pronouns. I'm still getting to know myself and how I want to identify and how I want others to refer to me. You can just change them. And in that group, people don't bat an eyelid at that. So I think that's something I've found really positive and inclusive. So yeah, that's another element of peer support. But I think in the future, it would make sense to bring peer support into it in another way. Another thing we experimented with was having like a 6-week course instead of it just being you download the app and you just use it continually. What would happen if we brought together a group just for 6 weeks, again online, everything's always been online with Calder, to see how that would work. And the health outcomes are really positive, but at the same time, people said they wanted to be able to access stuff if and when they needed it. So some of the actual timings were just inconvenient for people, which is why we pivoted to creating video course content and having, you know, some of these questions you're having are quite private. So that's why the video course has made a lot of sense.
Well, one of the things that I had a question for was how you handle the data. Like in those meditation courses, how do you provide the control back to the person who's attending those things? Do you display their face? Is it a video session? Is it a Zoom call? Is that something that you encountered that sometimes people just don't want to give their name or show their face? Is that something that you encountered in the research?
Yeah, the showing the face thing is tricky. If there's a person in the mindfulness session who doesn't show their face, it's more kind of uncomfortable and I guess potentially dangerous for the other participants because they don't know who's in that space. So at first we were a bit more loose about that and we were like, okay, maybe some people don't feel comfortable on Zoom, or maybe they've, I don't know, got stuff going on in the background or something. But in the end we came up with the policy that you have to have your video on during the mindfulness sessions because it promotes a sense of safety for everybody in the group. So we encourage people to rename themselves on Zoom, you know, just how you could do that in the top right corner or whatever it is. But in terms of faces, people did have to be like present and have their face on Zoom. And then the same thing for the 6-week course. I think it helps people to connect. And then if people are more shy and they need a different type of support, obviously they can go to the app and then that's totally anonymous.
So you mentioned there you don't do the one-on-one therapy.
Yeah.
What's the reason behind that?
I think we could do the one-on-one therapy in the future. The reason is places like Pink Therapy, and there are other directory websites where you can find a therapist exist, but having another directory for LGBT therapists doesn't necessarily solve the problem because they're still expensive and they're still super booked up. The supply and demand problem's still there. Whereas if you get, for instance, the content that a gender affirming therapist would be able to give you and put it in a video course, then everybody can access it much cheaper.
One of the things, and hopefully I'm not coming too left field here, Charlotte, where, you know, I'm as I mentioned, I'm still kind of improving the language that I use all the time, like, you know, and I've definitely, you know, improved over the last decade and making sure that I don't make slip ups effectively. But I do coaching, and I know an awful lot of leaders struggle with a lot of the language that's used, not out of prejudice, just out of fear of getting things wrong.
Yeah.
And potentially upsetting people. And even me saying that now, I've got a level of anxiety because it's never my intent if I've made mistakes in this call, I was going to say phone call. How, or do you have any recommendation of resources where people can learn to, I guess, improve their language? Because I remember one, their CPO, and they were basically saying to me, I wish I had somebody that could actually help me improve the language that's used in my day-to-day life, because they find themselves saying stuff like, hey guys, and I'm like, hey,
let's
use that one. And they're like, really, why? And I'm like, well, and I find myself doing as much as I can, but I would like to learn an awful lot more. And I know this isn't probably part of the service that Calda provides, but there's definitely something out there for people just to learn and stay up to date, not up to date, but just to, you know, making sure that they're able to prevent any of these kind of, because most of my friends want to be inclusive.
Yeah, yeah, I totally get what you're saying. I think in general, people can recognize somebody who makes a mistake and has good intentions,
yeah,
versus somebody who's just being, you know, homophobic or transphobic. Yeah. I think there's quite a thick line between, you know, accidentally saying slightly the wrong thing and being actively homophobic and transphobic. So I think part of it is just, you know, people can tell you have good intentions, and if you ever make a mistake, you can always apologize. I think that's one thing. And then the other thing is We Create Space are really good, and I think do that type of work. Obviously, places like Stonewall are really good. And you can sign up for newsletters as well from them, which is like just a really fun publication that has lots of LGBT news. Oh, and okay. You can sign up for We Create Space and Stonewall, and then that way you're kind of like, oh, this is cool, there's, you know, some controversy around this song, and learn about the different stuff that's going on. But I think what was I gonna say about this? I think that people aren't like kind of there waiting to kind of chastise somebody for saying the wrong thing. I think it's accepted that over time different language comes in and out of fashion. Like, we've, you know, with Calda, we have to be super sensitive, and we have sometimes said the wrong thing. Like, for instance, being called the LGBTQIA+ mental wellbeing app is something we've worked on for a period of time, because in some ways it might be more inclusive to be called the queer mental wellbeing app, but we found some people find the word queer more alienating and less positive, whereas some people say LGBTQIA+ isn't great because it's got the I in there for intersex people, but we don't have like a specific video course for people who are intersex, and the experience of an intersex person is so different to the experience of, say, a gay person. Obviously, you can be gay and intersex, so it is tricky to kind of like use inclusive language, but also I guess we included like intersex in the LGBTQIA+ because we feel that lots of the challenges that intersex people are facing are similar to the rest of the community. But some intersex people say, like, yes, I'm intersex, but I don't want to be associated with Calda. Like, we've had an Instagram message from somebody saying that, which I completely respect. But at the same time, there's a bunch of other intersex people who are like, we want gender and sexuality affirming mental health support too. So I think that there's like, you know, the a tricky term, yeah. thing. Yeah. And I think, it's just a constant.
That's something I remember someone asked me before, like, you know, because when I was in school, way back in the 90s, folks, it was the LGBT community.
Yes.
And then, you know, extended to IA+. And, you know, how does that evolve in terms of, you know, is there, I know Stonewall is probably a really good location to go to, but how does the I enter into that situation when you just saw there, like, one person didn't want it, one person did want it? So how do you handle that? How do you get around that to try and avoid conflict and try and avoid upsetting people?
I think some form of conflict is inevitable in that. So in that instance, there are still going to be some intersex people who say, I don't feel part of the LGBT umbrella, and that isn't something that interests me or supports me with what I need. Yeah. And then there are some intersex people who are like, the, you know, things like the stigma and discrimination that we face is similar. We're all fighting for, you know, LGBT rights in general, and therefore I don't mind being included in that umbrella. So I think some form of like debate there is just normal and healthy. I think even as I'm talking about all of this stuff, like there's nothing cohesive about the LGBTQIA plus community, really, apart from like vaguely some umbrella terms, and like obviously people are having such different experiences. So and I'm just kind of speaking from my experience and my opinion and the era that I'm from. So I think where was I going with this? So with people not being a cohesive group, like that can just be understood and recognized, and then different people can speak about things in the way that they want. The thing that I have found interesting is, there's another way of talking about this, which I think is maybe easier, which is like when people talk about gender and sexuality in general, and that being like gender, sexuality, relationship, diverse, being a nice kind of simple catch-all term. Not that you could talk about a simple catch-all term for something that's so wide, but maybe the reason that I think, say, we talk about bisexuality in the same breath as talking about trans rights or the rights of different people is probably because they're all connected to the patriarchy and the gender binary. So if you are trying to like promote LGBT rights, if you promote the rights of trans people, you also promote the rights of gay people and bi people all at the same time, because their interests are connected, I guess, is one thought. And then in terms of talking about gender, sexuality and relationship diversity, if you think about it, polyamorous people could be heterosexual, but I kind of would still count them as like people who face similar types of stigma and have similar types of challenges, even though they're making like a relationship choice versus somebody who's gay. So I think maybe that's why gender, sexuality and relationship diverse is like a nice phrase, because it's talking about people across a wide spectrum.
Awesome. I think that's a really solid piece of advice, like, you know, for anyone listening there to take that one on board. Can I go back a little bit more? Because as we're talking, I'm getting more and more questions, which is usually a sign of a good conversation, folks. But I want to understand, you said there, way back at the start, if the community go to a therapist that I'd say is a traditional therapist that's in their local town or their village, okay? Mm-hmm. What's happening in that existing service that's not meeting the needs? Other than the language, are the therapists so far behind that they're using offensive language or just unaware to connect? Or what does that look like? Are you able to tell us a little bit more about that one? I'm keen to know more about that.
Yeah, so I definitely don't think that all therapists don't have an understanding. I think therapy can be really helpful for some people and it can be less helpful for others. I think in terms of looking after your mental health in general, therapy isn't the only tool. You also wanted, in the middle of the night, if you have a panic attack, which I have done in the past, there is no therapist there for you in the middle of the night, right? But your phone is there with mental health apps on it. So I think that mental health apps are just another way of accessing mental health support. I think things like exercise, making friends, having good housing, all of these different things contribute to having good mental health. And I guess during the research, I also remember meeting an Italian person who was like, I want to speak to an Italian therapist in Italian. And I think that is just about wanting to talk to somebody who really understands your language and gets you, which is kind of, that therapeutic relationship you have is really important. And if you feel understood and kind of you feel validated by your therapist, I think that's really important. I think maybe the only thing that could be bad about seeing a cisgender heterosexual therapist is if they misunderstand your problem as, let's say you're polyamorous, they think that you're having a problem because you're polyamorous, or you're having a problem because you're gay, that isn't isn't quite what's happening, right? You happen to be polyamorous and you're also experiencing some kind of, you know, depression or anxiety. So yeah.
So they almost look at the orientation as being the issue.
Not always. Obviously, some therapists are brilliant, I think. But I mean, any therapist has a bias in some respects, which I think that they try and do training to like be more aware of.
So what about, and again, I'm just, again, a curious designer talking to another, you know, brilliant designer. But I want to understand, like, around creating, you know, connecting people to the physical therapists, the real world therapists who get it. Is that something that is outside of the scope of the service, do you think?
I think it's outside of the scope. I think it's outside of the scope for now, but probably not out of the scope forever.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many things that are still trickling in my mind. Like, you know, it's one of the first conversations in a while that I'm somewhat kind of deeply curious, but I do have a sense of nervousness about saying the wrong thing, because I definitely want to make sure that that comes across in this episode. Like, if I have said anything that has been deemed offensive, I'll go back and I'll correct it. But I think this whole service, it's just mind-blowing for me, because again, sometimes I've got the blinkers on and I don't really realize what it must be like, and how difficult it must be like for some people out there to experience services that are not meeting the needs. It's the curiosity that's within me as a service designer to constantly improve that. So, like, hats off to yourself and Daniel for taking the initiative, doing the research and really creating something that is hugely powerful and admirable as well, like for the community, because I'm learning as I go along, and I can just imagine how appreciative people must be to see these kind of services emerge. What kind of feedback have you had from the community who've started to use it?
Firstly, thank you for all those compliments. That's lovely. And yeah, we've had some really positive feedback. So we've had people who've come from TikTok and then been like, oh, this has been really helpful. And we've had nice reviews. We've had the mindfulness sessions have been super, super like heartwarming, because we have like a sharing session and people often, you know, they go through a journey with us, and me and Daniel generally go to all the mindfulness sessions as well as the mindfulness coach. So it's been really nice to see people who, for instance, like struggled with work, had like some kind of problem at work that they felt like they couldn't overcome at the start, and then seeing them talking later and being like, I've moved forward and I'm back at work and I'm happier. So that's just totally amazing. And then we've also done some sort of mini health evaluation trials on the app. So with the 6-week course, we did a health evaluation trial and we saw a decrease in anxiety and depression. And then we did the same thing with the app just over 2 weeks. What kind of impact could it have over 2 weeks? And we saw some positive changes there as well. So that's been just really, really nice. So I think it's still, you know, it's still the journey in terms of CALDA creating LGBT mental health support, other organizations like thinking about doing similar things, and other organizations bringing some of those ideas into their practice. And eventually we'll be in a place where there isn't a discrepancy between LGBT mental health kind of outcomes and general population mental health outcomes. That's what I want to see ultimately, which is in some ways bigger than CALDA and bigger than me, which is positive, I think.
Yeah. It's that 10,000 feet kind of perspective of the problem, but like, it's definitely, it's providing huge help to the community. I'll put a link to calda.co into the show notes for people to go over and check it out. And if people want to reach out to you, Charlotte, what's the best way to do that?
I'm on Twitter at CI Fountain. And there's also the CALDA Instagram at Team CALDA. So yeah, that's nice. A great way to stay in touch.
Put a link to that in the show notes. Yeah, no, absolutely. And maybe LinkedIn as well. We'll throw a link to your LinkedIn.
Yeah, great.
Absolutely. I'll throw that one in there. Charlotte, I like to end all my conversations with thanking the guests for being open, for being vulnerable and giving me your time and energy and your space. And I just want to say the same to you. So thank you so much for being so open in this conversation. I really, really enjoyed hearing and learning all about Calda.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks so much for giving me a platform and a chance to absolutely chat away about Calda.
Anytime.
There you go, folks. I hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you enjoyed it and want to listen to more, why not visit thisishcd.com, where you can learn more about what we're up to and also explore our courses whilst you're there. Thanks again for listening.